This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. Broadcasting live on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, and in the evenings on WCPT 820, Chicago's Progressive Talk. It is the Matt McNeil Show for your Monday. Matt, I'm back from Chicago and Ann Arbor. I'll talk a little bit about that. You know, for a rapture, this kind of sucks, man. How many people did you know got taken up today with the eclipse?
I'm looking at my tally, zero.
I mean, it's almost like these far-right nutbags that thought the eclipse and earthquake in New York and the cicadas coming out really are just grasping for straws, making up things like they go. I was expecting a rapture. I was not planning on doing a show today here, Brent. Disappointing.
That's what happens when you plan for the rapture and you're left disappointed. Now you got to do a radio show. You got nothing to talk about. You're just going to have to shoot from the hip, and there we go.
How much Kool-Aid do I have to drink? I got a lot of things I got to get to today, including talking a lot about Chicago, because Chicago, I was down in you for a few days. You're a magnificent city. I do love you. I'll talk to you about that coming up here in just a little bit. But once again, we're going to start off today with Austin Frerich. Now, Austin is a guy we had on before. He's an expert in when it comes to agricultural, financial agricultural, the economy of agriculture. And really has his finger on the pulse of what is happening out in America right now. He's got a brand new book out there, and it's called Barron's, Money, Power, and the Corruption of America's Food Industry. He's kind enough today to talk to us a little bit about the book as well as the ag sector itself. Austin, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
My absolute pleasure. Now, I want to start off because we had you on, I'm guessing about a year, year and a half ago. We talked about the ag sector because I spent a bit of time in Iowa, and I got to see the ag community straightforward, and it was pretty clear, at least to me, where a lot of these problems, there are problems within the ag sector, which were really hurting the day-to-day farmer out there. If I could just start off with your thought right now on the status of the agricultural sector in regards to the working farmer in America today.
The family farmer is almost effectively dead. We see massive consolidation, industrialization of that space. I view rural America at this point as extraction colonies. It's producing the most wealth it's ever produced, but none of that money is staying in these communities. And we shouldn't be surprised that, you know, strongman right-wing politics is filling that void.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. There was a story this weekend in the Star Tribune that talked about basically it's the water supplies, which is a major crisis here in Minnesota and a lot of places in regards to nitrates from fertilizer getting into the water supplies. And there is this moment, and I'm going to talk about this coming up in the 4 o'clock hour as well, but there's a moment within this article where he knows exactly where the problem's coming from, but yet doesn't want to address the fact that it's the fertilizers, it's the nitrates. It's kind of one of those things. How dare the Democrats try to regulate fertilizers? You're taking away our life, our community, our livelihood. On the other side, it's, why is the Democrats allowing our water system to get polluted? You're taking away our life, our quality of life, sort of thing. It's not difficult to see. I was seeing this 20 years ago. I could see where the problem was happening in rural America. Why do you feel so many farmers, so many people that still live there fail to just want to, you know, to see what's going on? We can go with the sugar beet farmers and the whole big, what was it, Crystal Sugar up in the Red River Valley, and that when that whole thing went down. We all see where the problem is. Why do you feel why do you think the rural communities don't want to address it?
Well, let me first of all start off by saying, I mean, you guys have one of the best state legislator members on this issue of fertilizer, Rick Hansen.
Oh, yes.
Who chairs your House committee on this stuff, is just leading the cause on this. But, I mean, to your point about what's not being mentioned, let's start with, I was shocked when I started this book that the largest private company in America is Cargill, your hometown hero.
Yes.
I mean, they are bigger than the Koch brothers. I mean, they are... I compare the Cargill empire to the closest example we have to Standard Oil today in America. They own the middle. They're all about transporting grain. And so they want to produce as much grain and process as much grain as possible. So anything that limits on that, they don't like. And they're incredibly coy Machiavellian in how they exercise power. They never do things overtly. They use third parties. They give money to organizations who do their bidding. Mm-hmm. But to your question over why is this not issue not resonating in rural America is, I mean, I think to me it reflects more that the state of media. I mean, so much of the newspapers that are left in America are these elite white urban papers. And so many of these papers that used to tell these stories in rural communities that have just been hollowed out. I mean, the Des Moines Register used to have an entire agriculture section. And I was able to do a lot of research in my book because of that incredible reporting. That's all gone. I mean, private equity owns that paper now. They've gutted it. And so what you have is like this whole ecosystem financed by the robber barons, the news ecosystem. And so which is just like, it almost is like kind of reminds me of like Appalachia, you know, in the 19th century where like the coal press is financing coal news. I mean, that to me is like the biggest hindrance here.
And I can tell you, I mean, my thesis paper for my degree was on agricultural radio, which for the most part doesn't even exist anymore. You know, and it makes me sad because there was real information and real news there, but the system itself, and we can talk about this in a lot of different ways, but for large swaths of this country, the farmer grew the crops, they took it to the local co-op, it went to market, they sold it, kind of, and the money came back here. That entire system is just gone now, correct?
Correct.
Yes.
I mean, like, totally. It is, I mean, there's a whole undercurrent in my book is what is a farmer, you know? A lot of these barons pretend to be farmers, but like, for example, my dairy baron, he created Milk Called Fairlife. He secretly lives at the Ritz-Carlton in Puerto Rico to likely evade paying capital income taxes. And the dirty secret is it's mostly undocumented men who are the real farmers here.
You talk about this. I think that's one of the parts of your book, which I think is the untold part here is you're talking about these barons, these people of, you know, masters of industry that control the agricultural side. But what you're also saying is, by the way, this is why large swaths of rural America are desolate and destitute right now. It's not Democrats in a state capitals writing legislation. It's the corporate ag system that is basically gutted. And in part, well, I shouldn't say it's not completely. I mean, there's a lot of political bills that have been passed that have been utilized and tax breaks that have been utilized. But the reality is these are corporations whose goal is not to promote farming for anyone else. It's basically them capturing as much of the money from these farmers as possible and putting it in their pocket.
Oh, totally. I mean, that's why I really wanted to use this robber baron framework to show people we're in another gilded age. We've been here before. And never forget, Matt, I mean, the goal of any corporation is monopoly. Mm-hmm. That's where profits are. So you will always have this fundamental tension between government not wanting concentrated markets and business wanting them. And to me, I almost view this as cyclical where like, oh, these laissez-faire moments just happen. They run themselves into the ground. And the question now is, where do we go from here? What should the future of the American food system be once we put the second gilded age to rest?
Let's get into a little bit of the book. I don't want to share too much because I want people to go buy the book for sure. You brought up Cargill. Have you seen the whole thing with Kathy Cargill?
I think it's so funny. All my friends up in Minnesota keep sending me the little updates, like the whole Cheerio protest and everything.
Oh, gosh. As you talk about it, it's like these are not farmers. Sure, they cosplay farmers. They'll bring out a wagon with some pumpkins on it, throw some jeans on and a flannel shirt, and pose for some photos to make it look like they're a farmer. These guys aren't farmers. She's basically trying to buy up the whole part of Duluth and turn it into something, and then when people call her out, she really does throw what I would describe as the wealthy person temper tantrum, and yeah, I'm taking my toys and going home.
Yeah, she called like $700,000 homes trash or something. Like, it just goes to show you how disconnected they are from us, and just, I mean, what I had fun doing this book is, let me first start by saying, I didn't want to be the last of the rich and famous. I wanted to use these robber barons to tell bigger structural stories. But at the same time, I wanted to change up the story. So, like, my hog baron is who I open with. He, to me, is like trashy New Florida money, whereas Cargill historically was aristocratic money. And that's what's wild about this Duluth thing is the family has been so guarded for so long that you really didn't know who they were. And this is the first time. Not only are they in the news, but it's, like, it's really trashy.
Yeah. Oh, I've got to imagine someone with the family has pulled her aside and is like, okay, no, 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 no. This is not our brand. This is not a Real Housewives of Duluth here. We're not doing this. And I don't know. We do have to understand, though, and this is one of the things, I kind of joked about it when I said, oh, they do their little photo ops with farms. part of their entire image is to portray themselves as just a salt of the earth, you know, farmer that is just no different than any other farmer on the planet. And the reality is, you know, as you described, these are corporations masquerading as farmers, and it's almost kind of hard to comprehend how this has been so successful for them.
Oh, totally. I mean, I once in a while in the book, when you read it, you'll see a few little sassy lines I kept in. But the one, I mean, go back to the dairy guy. He had this whole episode of Dirty Jobs on him. And, like, you know, it looks like, you know, he looks like a farmer. He's doing all this thing with Mike Rowe. And you just, once you undercover, you unpack it, you realize he's not doing the work. Also, he sells a narrative that he's sustainable. His operation is the most unsustainable model of production possible for dairy. But then on top of it, like, you just realize Mike Rowe used to be a QVC host. And I grew up watching QVC. My grandma loves it. And I was like, oh, he just sold this Robert Barron's narrative like he used to sell products on QVC. He's just a corporate hack. That's mm-hmm. all he is.
You talk about Driscoll's, the fruit guys, and some of the things you talk about. I thought this was a local company. I swear to God, when I was like, oh my God, you know, this is not a local company. This is your fruit baron. These guys are a massive worldwide. Well, they're not a farmer at all. They're just a company, right?
Oh, totally. I mean, they are, of all my barons in my book, they're the ones that shock people the most. Because, like, Walmart's my grocery baron. That doesn't really shock anyone that Walmart's exploitive. But Driscoll's does. And Driscoll's is what their public image is and what they are, two different things. I mean, like, the brothers have written op-eds in the Washington Post with the former governor of California, Jerry Brown. They seem incredibly, kind of like classic California liberals. And then you unpack their empire, and it's like, oh, their whole production model is like this modern-day version of sharecropping from the South.
Wow.
Where they own the IP of the berry. They contract out the production to other growers who move production offshore so they can exploit labor, exploit environmental things, and then Driscoll's handles the marketing of it. Honestly, it's no different than Silicon Valley, you know, where they own the IP and then they have it, you know, things made in other countries.
Mm. What's interesting is I live in town of Hopkins, and it's got the Raspberry Festival. At one point, it was Raspberry Farmers. And it's just the industry as we know it that is sold to us, this, you know, like I said, salt of the earth industry, it's gone. It's gone completely.
Well, so, I mean, that's the thing. The key part here is the Robert Barron, the people doing it right aren't playing on a level playing field.
Yeah.
So that's the thing is, like, those local raspberry growers that used to be there, first of all, they're competing against a company that's exploiting labor, exploiting children. And then on top of it, like, the Farm Bill has really just pushed all the produce offshore in America. Anything that's labor intensive has moved offshore because, you know, so much subsidy. The Farm Bill is now designed to overproduce.
Well, I'll tell you what, Austin, if I can, let me step in here. Let's take a quick break. I want to come back. I want to let you finish on this and then get into a few other issues. Austin Frerich is joining us. The book is Barron's. We'll take a break. Come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show. It's the Matt McNeil Show on a Monday. Austin Frerich is joining us, an expert in agricultural antitrust policy. Also, I should mention he's a fellow of the Thurman Arnold Project at Yale University. And the book out right now is Barron's Money, Power, and the Corruption of America's Food Industry from Austin Frerich. And Austin, you were talking about fruit farmers. And this is something that used to be everywhere. There used to be fruit farmers everywhere. And that just that this has been wiped out by these barons.
I kid you not, all the apple orchards I grew up with disappeared in my hometown.
Yeah.
And you're like, what happened? Like, it wasn't like they became subdivisions. It was, they're planted with corn. And then I started digging into the Farm Bill. And the history of the Farm Bill is, comes out of the Dust Bowl, markets oversupplied, had to be find a sweet spot. And the original Farm Bill was very much like Goldilocks. You know, where you get a little subsidies, but then you take land out of production. And there was limits. And it was very much kind of like a family farm model. And I tell this history where Cargill didn't like that. The Cargill family, I mean, they want to process and move as much grain as possible. So the family thought FDR was evil, you know, all this kind of stuff. So they hated it from day one, and they worked over decades to basically warp and corrupt the Farm Bill. I really focus on that 1996 Farm Bill, what I call the Wall Street Farm Bill. For now, the Farm Bill is designed to overproduce a few things at the expense of everything else. So if you You can get a ton of subsidies. The cap is way raised. The coupling has been disconnected. The conservation program is pretty much corrupted. Mm-hmm. You can build an industrial hog facility and get conservation money for a hog manure lagoon. And then crop insurance is basically a price guarantee. So prices get so low, you're paid. 60% of the premiums are paid by the taxpayer. And, like, for example, Bill Gates is one of the largest owners of farmland in America, so he can get unlimited crop insurance if he wants. And so what you realize is what this does is it crowds out everything else. So all those people doing raspberries in your community, you know, the incentive now is for them to do corn.
Mm-hmm. At what point, and by the way, you're interesting. You've made my eyebrows raise when you say the Cargill family did not like FDR. I did not know that. That's an interesting. I'll have to read up on that a little bit more. But, you know, as we are today, I mean, I guess what does it take? I mean, clearly the politicians are terrified of going and readdressing this, even though we see farm subsidies. There's 8 farm subsidies going to one house. Everyone's getting 6 figures. And it's, you know, and there's a problem there. That's clearly this is welfare for the wealthy, and it is an incredibly large problem. The people that really need it get a pittance, and then the wealthy people that really benefit from them act like this is benevolent. But it's not going to get addressed. I mean, there comes the question, and I go back to that thing about the water in southeastern Minnesota and whether or not and the nitrates there. Does it have to take that? Where literally life itself is being threatened, you're getting cancer, you're getting this, and yet you still are going to have people that are arguing, no, we shouldn't change anything. But, I mean, is that what it's going to take? I mean, is it getting so bad now in rural America that they might wake up to the reality that the corporate ag structure is what's really killing small-town America?
I mean, keep in mind, I mean, Iowa's a canary in the coal mine here. All those water issues are just intensified here. I mean, like 60-70% of the waterways in Iowa are just too polluted to go in. We are now the second highest cancer rate of any state in the country, and it's getting worse. That's what this model does. Mm-hmm. But what to do, I mean, don't... An undercurrent of my book, though, to be honest with you, is it takes two to tango. Mm-hmm. You know, I talk about, you know, sure, there's a lot of votes to gut the farm bill was pushed for by Republicans, but it was President Clinton that signed it into law. It was Secretary Vilsack who's overseen more concentration in the meat markets these last 4 years. I mean, that is, there's a part of the Democrat Party, too, that, you know, played with fire here. And, like, I want to be very honest about it.
And I should mention, you have consulted and worked with Democratic campaigns in the past. And so you kind of see there, and I see it, too. And, I mean, I see it, whether in from my perspective, it's the lack of, you know, of support to run DFL candidates in a lot of these communities where you have people who are saying, we need to wake up to this problem, and they're just not getting the support from the state parties. But as well, you're seeing it from the other side where it's just, you know, it's one thing to say we're going to rein in, you know, fraud or, you know, at least unfair governmental practices, but then it comes down to it and everyone's terrified of it.
Well, totally. I mean, that is... I mean, these are a lot of my barons, like take my dairy baron. They're basically feudal lords. I mean, they're the largest employer in the area. They have a lot of money to buy off the local elite. And you just kind of, you have those kind of Appalachia coal mining power dynamics kick in into these areas. And I mean, my frustration at this moment is you had such a bipartisan moment to reform the American meat markets, but Vilsack failed to do anything. I mean, Cargill got into the chicken industry. Walmart's made aggressive play into the beef industry. And you might not win rural America, but if you could outflank Republicans on, you know, helping the rancher right now, doing something about meat markets, you would improve your margins. And, like, that to me is, like, I think in the food concentration space, you see one of the best examples of Biden's appointments and one of the worst, where Vilsack is arguably one of his worst local appointees. But on the flip side, the appointment of Lina Khan to be the chairwoman of the Federal Trade Commission is just incredible. I mean, this woman is filing all these antitrust lawsuits against big tech. She basically put a stop to that Kroger-Albertson merger. And then you had a story last week in the Wall Street Journal where Matt Gaetz just praised her. I mean, it's these weird moments in American politics where weird bedfellows come together, where meaningful things can happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we need that because, I mean, there was a story here in Minnesota of the mistreatment of immigrant workers by a farming industry. And as you talk about with the ability to buy off the locals, I mean, the local county prosecutors apparently didn't want anything to do with prosecuting them. You know, just to, you know, it's just, well, all of a sudden, even though they're kind of caught dead to rights doing some bad things, that there's no appetite locally to try to prosecute this, which basically creates that feudal system where there is no course of recourse for the local community against the wrongs of the corporation unless the federal government steps in.
Oh, totally. I mean, just I had that with my dairy baron. I discovered my dairy baron runs one of the largest tourist attractions in Indiana. You can come tour his, you know, his industrial dairy. You can take a little train through it. A little bus. But, like, I discovered going through OSHA records, an undocumented worker died. Got sucked into this manure pipe. And it took me 2 years. I mean, the county coroner was also the county funeral director. And he didn't want to ruffle feathers. And it took me a lot of, you know, some legal stuff to get those death records. And, I mean, I see why most people are just trying to get by right now. I mean, these people have real power, and they're scared. But then on the flip side, I mean, I have to go back to, you know, Minnesota, where you have an incredible Attorney General, Keith Ellison, doing real work in this space.
Yes.
I mean, he's going after industrial dairy really hard right now. There's that one up by St. Cloud that's just been incredibly exploitive where, I mean, it's almost like, I mean, the pictures of how they were housing their workers was just barbaric.
That's the same story, yeah. And thank God for Keith Ellison to go after him because, you know, that's what we need. We need leadership. But we also need the information, and that's why your book is great. And I want to, if I don't care if you're in the metro or if you're in the country, for goodness sakes, buy a copy for everyone in the country. We need to get that out there. But they need to read this. They need to understand this. Austin Frerick, Frerick, Barons, Money, Power, and the Corruption of the American Food Industry. It talks about how we've gotten to this place, and yeah, obviously, we got a lot to get out of this. Austin, congratulations on the book. All my best. Thank you very much. I really appreciate the time today.
Yeah, thanks again for having me on.
My pleasure. Austin Frerick. We'll have him back on again in a heartbeat, in a freaking heartbeat, because that's a topic we have to talk about. Let's take a break, come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Broadcasting in the evenings on WCPT 820 Chicago's Progressive Talk and on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. And I got first of all, Austin Frerick. I mean, dude, that dude is one of those guys where you're like, oh, yeah, you're smart. And if I may, just really quick, piggybacking on what he is saying. The reason why Republicans spent all that money buying up every radio station in rural America, every newspaper in rural America, every billboard in rural America, is because they were about to go out there and punch every farmer in the crotch repeatedly. And they wanted the farmer to say, thank you, may I have another? And that is the world that we have right now in rural America. It blows my mind. And like I said, I'm going to get to the story coming up here in the 4 o'clock hour out of southeastern Minnesota where the wells are all getting poisoned by nitrates, but the farmers, well, they get upset when the Democrats try to regulate the nitrates in the fertilizers, but then they also are blaming the Democrats for not fixing their water supply. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things where you guys just, you are cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, aren't you? They basically cannot get out of their own way. And I don't know what it takes to wake these people up outside of maybe this is what it does take. Half their family being dead of man-made cancer. And all of a sudden someone figuring out a way they can tie it back to corporate America and filing a lawsuit. And all of a sudden things start to change. But I want to make sure we understand something. Every rural Republican I know wants to keep the current system in place where the only jobs you have are working basically a corporate farm where you live on that farm, but you punch a clock at your own house. You have to work and drop off your product to a corporate overlord. You get paid basically cents on the dollar and are told you better like it or else we won't get you your seed or we won't get you, the fuel you need. You won't be able to get higher, farm hands. Or if you're not doing that job, you're working at the grocery store or the gas station making minimum wage. And then they tell you, like, you know who the real problem is? The black people in Minneapolis. And all you dupes sit there as you watch ag check after ag check go to the wealthiest people in your town, six, sometimes seven-figure checks, for those people to sit on their butts and watch Netflix. Meanwhile, you're scraping to get by, and you're like, yeah, it's them. I can't help you. I'll come back to that. I'll come back to that. But he's right. I mean, it's – and God help the rural America when these ag giants learn how to do automated farm equipment, and then none of them will be in sure, they'll do their cosplay farm, you know, posters, you know, and photos for the year. But the reality is they're all going to be living on, you know, the 70th floor of a skyrise building, operating their tractors from a virtual reality helmet and never once being out there. And, you know, you're going to be out there saying, it's great. Yeah, sure. 952-946-6205. Brett, when was the last time you were in Chicago?
Oh, I think 2, maybe 3 years ago.
How long were you down there for?
But just a weekend.
I was... I had a trip. This is a spring break trip for my daughter. She's my last one and still in high school. And we wanted to go visit a college. I got to tell you, I'm exhausted still right now because either I was driving all day. Yesterday, I drove all the way back from Chicago. Wednesday, I drove all the way there. Friday, I drove to Ann Arbor. I'll get back to that in here in a second. And back to Chicago. But the... You know, it was either driving or I was walking. And my 2 days, I was walking. One day, I did 9.5 miles. The other day, I did 11.2 miles of walking in 1 day.
That's a lot.
My legs, I got blisters. My legs hurt. But I had a blast. I had an absolute blast. I want to thank you. First of all, WCPT got to stop on by the mothership down in Chicago. Heartland Signal down there.
Yeah, I saw some photos and heard a little bit of the interview too.
Oh,
yeah,
I got some cool. Other photos of me and Patty Vasquez, who you can listen to here at night at 9 o'clock. I'm on the air down there at 9 o'clock, so it's nice. Patty is just, not only is Patty Vasquez one of the smarter political minds I've ever met. Not only is she gut wrenchingly funny at times, but she's also one of the most decent human beings, and I adore her. I just adore her. If you're not listening to Patty's show weeknights here on AM 950, you're wrong. She's fantastic. I'd love to get her up here to do some live shows up here. It would be fantastic. I got there, Matt and the whole crew, I met them there. Just a nice setup there in Chicago. Went and did the show. They sent me to, this is last Wednesday night. They sent me to Superdog, which I am wearing the t-shirt. Yeah, did you go unless you got the t-shirt?
Oh, yeah,
I got the t-shirt as advertised. That was exceptional. That was, have you ever been to Superdog?
Not that one. Nope.
I think it's the only one. I don't know. Yeah, there's hot dog stands everywhere over there, but we did that. The city itself, I had quite literally the nicest hotel view I have ever had in my entire life. I stayed at the Hilton Garden Inn, what is it? Hilton Garden Inn, which is off. It was on off 11th and Michigan there, between Wabash and Michigan on 11th. And my hotel room faced to the north, and we're kind of on the south side. We were kind of down by, we are fairly close to the Natural History Museum down there. And so you open up the blinds in the room. And it's the entire downtown of, and I'm on the 29th floor, the entire downtown of Chicago. It was just spectacular. I'm going to share those photos too, because I sat and looked out the window forever. I mean, just what a great view that was. I could see Lake Michigan off to the right.
It's a great view.
Oh, it's big. Michigan. I don't know. It's a great lake, if I'm not mistaken. I'm going to tell you the good stuff, and I got to tell you one bad thing that happened down there. First of all, on Wednesday, I did go to Second City. And if you've never seen the comedy improv groups down there, they're phenomenal. They are really good. I went and saw All the Things That You Will Glow, And that was just fantastic. One of the performers made two lines, which I thought were just great. Great comedy is based in reality. The first one was, it was just a little tiny skit to kind of get between two larger scenes. And there's two women talking about gunfire in Chicago, and they're kind of ducking, like, gunfire in Chicago. And at the end she goes, well, thank God I'm in Florida. And all of a sudden you hear someone firing off a semi-automatic weapon. I was like, oh, that's, you know, as much of the people in the South like to rip on Chicago. Have you been down to the South? I did not hear any gunfire in Chicago while I was there, but I have been to the South and I have heard gunfire shockingly much, quite a bit of it in places. I mean, kind of concerning levels of it. So yeah, I thought that was a good insight. The other joke she had, which was during this little thing where they're interacting with the audience, and she said, there's this mentality that we are in Chicago and we eat deep dish pizza all the time. Of course we don't. We only eat it when our friends come in as tourists and we take them to it. And I thought to myself, it's like, oh, okay, we can relate to that in Minneapolis, St. Paul. When was the last time you went to the Mall of America? Hey, I love the Mall of America. It's shocking how busy it is. I don't go there unless I got people in town visiting. I don't need to. I don't need to. Not that it's not great. It is great. And sure, there are some days when it's really wintry and I don't want to go walking down the streets, and you can go over there and walk around that place for a while. But I understood Chicago, I think, a little bit better with that, is that as much as they talk about the Chicago style hot dogs and and all these things, the reality is that a lot of that stuff is just, it is the touristy thing. And so, but I did a very touristy trip when I was there. Now, just really briefly, the Ann Arbor thing. My daughter wanted to go visit Michigan. I know. We did. Actually, to the folks, if there's anyone listening in Ann Arbor, that is an absolutely beautiful campus. That Michigan, University of Michigan campus is beautiful. And it was an impressive tour. It has to be an impressive tour because you know how much they charge for outstate Michigan, you go to University of Michigan, it's like $76,000 a year. Even my daughter's like, well, unless I get some money, I'm not, you know, this is not an option. So yeah, I'm glad you came to that realization. Also, we can take University of Hawaii off the list too, I think, just FYI. But, you know, it's a spectacular school, football championships and other sports championships aside. It just really is a lovely campus. And so I enjoyed that. Although that was a long day too. I took my daughter to her first Cracker Barrel that day. She was, she was impressed by the fashions available in the gift shop and some fine styling. But yeah, overall just out and back. And that was the night I went out to Second City. Cause she came back. She goes, let's do something really Chicago. I said, let's go to Second City. There are two specific sites in Chicago that if you are there, and I know there are people listening in there, I envy you immensely because of these two sites. Because on par, they are better than the Smithsonian. And that's not, I do not say that lightly. The second best of them is the Museum of Natural History, the Field Museum that's there down there. And it's kind of the night at the museum sort of thing. You know, you got, you know, dinosaurs and mastodons and all sorts of, you know, they have, you know, for the people at Minneapolis, St. Paul, they have the Bell Museum over at the University of Minnesota that has some of those great dioramas they did all those years ago. And they're very pretty. And they only have about another 500 of them. Now, they don't have the pretty artwork that ours have, but they are, to say they're expansive is an understatement. Just fantastic dinosaur history of the world as far as the dinosaurs and Earth and all this stuff. Just really kind of amazing. The museum itself is, you know, it's one of those places, if you go there, give yourself 4 to 5 hours of time. because you will need it because it's that good. It really was spectacular. The best one, and I should mention the other things that I did do compare on this list, were we did go to the Willis Tower. That was interesting. We went to the Hancock Tower, went out there. Once again, also an interesting. I did have to admit, I did love being in the footprints, I think it was at the Willis Tower, where Ferris Bueller, where they filmed the Ferris Bueller scene from the top of Willis Tower. That was kind of fun. And then I did go to the aquarium, which I have some thoughts on that. I'll come back to that a little bit later on. But by far, the greatest thing you can do while you're in Chicago is go to their Museum of Art right there on Michigan Avenue, right next to Millennial Park. I love the art museums we have here in Minneapolis, St. Paul. I do. The MIA is a gem. The Walker is an absolute gem. That place is surreal. You walk into a room and there's 10 Warhols. There's 14 Monets. There's 3 Van Goghs. There's 20 Picassos. There's, you know, name an artist. Name an important. Pizarro, Hopper, Grant Wood. They're all there. They're all there. I saw at least 10 iconic, stunning paintings, which are the best of the best in that museum. That museum is so extensive and expansive. We had to literally run from exhibit to exhibit hall just to try to see them all. I ended up taking a lot of pictures just because, I mean, we wanted to see as much as we could before we headed on out. That is one of the greatest experiences I've ever had in my entire life. More on that when I do come on back. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show.
You remind me of the babe. Power of voodoo.
The Matt McNeil Show on your Monday. No, the Chicago Museum of Art is... That is an eight-hour day. Plan on it. And... Even my daughter, who I have dragged to art museums a good chunk of her life, who loves going to the MIA and stuff, even she was like sitting with her jaw on the ground. You know, when I saw the Van Gogh self-portrait, I did start tearing up a little bit. I was just so amazed. I mean, because I came around a corner and there's American Gothic from Grant Wood. I'm like, son of a. Then there's the Hopper Diner picture. And it just kept going. It just kept going. I mean, the modern art wing has every major modern artist of the last 100 years, whether that's modern art or pop art, just amazing there. The impressionist is good. They had almost an entire room of George O'Keefe's. They have George O'Keefe's Clouds is there, which is just, it's in the clouds. I think it's called Above the Clouds. That's there. It's stunning. I cannot recommend it enough. And yes, you're right. It might not be the best thing for kids because art museums are there. But if your kid is 12 or under, they're going to have an amazing time at that place because it just is so amazing. By far, do you know what the most busy picture is there? The most, because you'd walk into a room and there'd be a crowd around in the corner, so you knew something was over there. What was the picture by far that was the most overwhelmed?
I'm not sure. Well, what was it?
It was the Chicago, the Saturday in the Park in Chicago, the one they used in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
It was packed. It took a while for us to get up there. Yeah. If you do that, just make one day that museum. Now, Chicago, I do love you. And I'm going to talk about the food and also a great way to see the city coming up in the next hour here for the folks in Minneapolis. But I do want to share with you what was the worst thing that happened to me in Chicago. No, I didn't get robbed. Well, I got robbed of lunch money. I had some exceptional food in Chicago, just top notch. The one exception to that, and this was the biggest exception, was we grabbed lunch on Thursday last week at the Museum of Natural History. Speaking of natural history, it's not the worst meal I ever had. That was the Rainforest Cafe over at the Mall of America for Mother's Day about 12 years ago. That was an absolute debacle, but it was close. So I go there and I get the soup and salad, and my daughter as well got the salad. Now I'll go with the soup first, which was a corn chowder, which had the consistency of the nacho cheese sauce at a gas station nacho stand. It was not good. And it had some flavor, kinda, but I ended up putting like a tablespoon of pepper in the thing just to try to get some flavor out of it. And it still didn't really work that well. Plus, you know, who doesn't like drinking paste? Okay, so that was the better part of the meal. Do you know how hard it is to screw up a Caesar salad? It is not, I mean, it's just a minimal amount of ingredients. It's lettuce, it's dressing, it's cheese, and croutons. Now, and I added chicken to this. So there'll be five total ingredients on this. You really can't miss this one up. So the first problem with my Caesar salad, and it's time for Matt's Cooking Corner. When you're making a salad, your head of lettuce comes with a core. You know, the thing that is at the bottom where it's connected to the ground, and it's really tough and really hard. You just cut that out. It's like, it's, you know, you can, with a head of iceberg lettuce, you can just take the iceberg lettuce, smash it down, the thing pops right out. And it's because it's unedible. I mean, you can use it for a vegetable stock or something like that, but it's really unedible. Same thing with romaine lettuce, which is the type of lettuce that they generally use in a Caesar salad. My small salad bowl had seven cores in it. Like we just kept pulling them out like they were teeth on a hillbilly. It's like someone trimmed all the cores off and said, well, just chuck those back. I had seven. My daughter had three in her salad. Seven cores of lettuce. None of them edible. Then came the dressing. Now, my daughter basically got the equivalent of about 4 cups worth of dressing on her salad. I got a thimbleful. I don't know why their measurements were so off. It looked like the same ladle. But needless to say, I got just the hint of dressing. I then got a clump of cheese, which this is usually Parmesan. This was shaved Parmesan. But all this Parmesan had been, I guess, pressed together. And it was just one large clump of cheese right on top. The croutons were okay. But then came the chicken. Now, I'll tell you what. You think you've had things that have not had any flavor? Let me tell you about the chicken on the Caesar salad over at the Museum of Natural History in Chicago. That chicken, first of all, there was no flavor at all. It didn't even really have chicken flavor. It just didn't. There was no flavor to it at all. I mean, no salt, no pepper, nothing. It's like, oh, no, we don't want to. What do you think? It's all a bunch of big guys from Utah eating it? Come on, man. You can put something on the damn thing. That was also the driest chicken I have ever eaten in my life. It was flavorless like styrofoam. It chewed like styrofoam. And it got to a point where I was laughing so hard at how bad the salad was. It was truly spectacular.
Did you finish the salad?
No. Okay. Well, because I'm not about to eat the cores out of the heads of lettuce. Sitting and gnawing on those for a week.
I like that the croutons were the highlight of the salad.
The croutons were there. I did get oyster crackers. I got oyster crackers with the soup. I hate the oyster crackers. That was a disturbing meal. Like they had dug it up at one of their freaking archaeological sites. What are you doing? Do not eat food at the Museum of Natural History in Chicago. Go see it. It's spectacular. It is spectacular. But for the life of God, do not eat the food there. You're welcome. There's a hot dog stand outside. Hey, Chicago, thank you much. I'll talk to you with Patty Vasquez tonight. Minneapolis, St. Paul, Hour 2 up next. Hour number 2 of the show here on your Monday. Matt and Brett, deeply disappointed in the lack of eclipse fun. Sounds like I heard from our friends over in Worthington. They did have a little bit of the break of the clouds. Couldn't really see it, but could just see the hazing outline of it. Looked pretty cool over there.
We're seeing nothing here in the Twin Cities.
And once again, rapture check. As these conservatives have talked about, cicadas and an earthquake in New York and the eclipse. How many people have been taken up to God at this point?
Have checked upstairs, zero. And I don't know if you were expecting when I ran upstairs during the break, if you were thinking I was going to come back or maybe I got raptured on the way up.
But you know what? That would be on par for me. I mean, Brett, you know,
you got no producer. I was,
it was more just a shock. You really?
Oh, that too.
Yeah. Raptured.
I'd be with you as well.
Oh, we're hedonistic little liberals over here.
No one that works in radio is going to get raptured.
The country station's empty right now. No, they're not. I know many of them. Oh, they're still there. If you're going to say there's going to be a rapture and people aren't being sucked up into the clouds, guess what? You don't get to get a do-over on this one.
At least we get some Nicolas Cage movies out of it, though, with all those Left Behind movies.
Okay, so we got a lot of things I got to talk about. So the eclipse is a bust here. It looks like it was cool there in some parts of the country, which it's great. Glad for you. You can't stare at it anyway. If you could have taken the vacation time, would you have been one of these guys that would have gone to an area and just watched it?
Nah, I probably wouldn't have done it. I've seen it before, so.
Did you realize it was right outside of Montreal? Why are you going to Texas, man? Go to Montreal. You get the Montreal food. You get to go up there. Hello, Frenchies. I like that. And then you get to see the eclipse that means, and you probably could convince a few of them that, you know, eclipse means you have to kiss. And so there you go. I mean, yeah, if it's going to go over a large metro area, I would have taken Montreal in a heartbeat.
Yeah, that's right in the line. I'm with you on that. Montreal over Texas. I've been to Texas before. Montreal. For many years.
I wonder how many people shot at the moon and down in Texas. It's a demon people. Started shooting at the moon. That's great. Thanks, Texas. You're just a gem. We do appreciate you. 952-946-6205. So we got a ton of stuff to talk about this week. We got Cooligan tomorrow, right? We got Stein on Wednesday. I got John Fugelsang joining us on Wednesday as well. Schechter for the full hour here on Friday, or full 2 hours on Friday in studio with us. In studio.
It's going to be great, yeah.
Yeah, we need to clean this place, man. Yee. we need to spick and span this sucker up. The reason why we've got all these heavy hitters coming in this week, it is Stephanie Miller's Sexy Liberal Save the World Comedy Tour at the Pantages Theater this weekend. Now, first things I want to make sure we mention is we're on the rocks at the Nicollet Diner on 13th and Nicollet, starting before the show at the Pantages, right?
Yeah, that's before the show at 4:30. Yep,
4:30, and that's a ticketed event. So if you do want to join us, they can go to the webpage for that?
Yeah, that you can order right on our website, am950radio.com.
All right, join us out there. I'm going to be out there. I know Bach is going to be out there. Most of the crew is going to be out there. We might have a few special guests. We'll hopefully have that. Join us. We'll have a good time for the pregame tailgate for the Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller show is at the Pantages Theater on Saturday night. You can get tickets at Live Nation is doing this tour. We have a link on our webpage as well for that.
Yeah, it's a tough URL, remember, so just go to our website, am950radio.com.
Well, thank God you didn't try to do the C39 ?
Yeah, that's,
you know,
we'd
thank,
be still doing the ID.
Yeah, again, just go to am950radio.com, click on the link, go to the Live Nation page, go get your tickets. I will say we're getting to a point of limited tickets in the lower section. There are still some really good, what are they called, the loge seats. They got one section of load seats still available there, but a lot of that place is getting sold out. So if you want to get tickets, you want to get tickets. Now, there is one other way you could get tickets, and that is through, hi there, us. So today we're going to give away a pair of tickets, right?
Yeah, we are, yes.
Tomorrow we're giving away a pair of tickets. Thursday I'm going to give away a pair of tickets, and that Thursday one's going to be the last pair we give away for the show. on Wednesday. What are we doing now?
The Wheel of Destiny makes another return.
Wheel of Destiny comes back one more time? Fantastic. How do people get their name on the Wheel of Destiny?
So right now we have a social media post that was put out there just before your show started on AM 950 Radio's Facebook page. Interact with that post and others we'll be sending out this week. It's the same deal that we had last week where you interact with that post, like, comment, share, react. You'll be entered into our Wheel of Destiny drawing. And then watch your email as well, because we'll be sending out some email blasts. And if you respond to that, you'll also be entered into the Wheel of Destiny.
So this is a Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal post on Facebook.
Yep.
You can like it. You can comment on it. You can share it. If you do any of those things, that's interacting, and you're going to be on the Wheel of Destiny.
Yep.
All right. How many pairs of tickets are we giving away on Wednesday with Wheel of Destiny?
Now, this will sound like a lot, thinking, oh, well, I have a great chance of winning 8, but a lot of people enter, so I think your best odds are still going to be purchasing tickets. But by all means, enter, but it's going to be tough because we get a lot of people that want these things.
I got to do the clickety-click song for 8 times?
Yeah.
All right, fine. Wheel of Destiny returns on Wednesday. So once again, you can try to win them today, tomorrow, or Thursday on the show. I got one pair each of those days. We got 8 pairs to give away with Wheel of Destiny. That is coming up here on Wednesday. Get to the AM 950 Facebook page. Interact with the Stephanie Miller post and you'll have a chance to being on the Wheel of Destiny. 8 pairs, a lot of winners that are going to be happening that day. And then, of course, you know, just enjoy the great programming here because, like I said, we got Fugelsang, got Schechter coming in this week. We might have another guest. We're kind of trying to make something happen here, but we might have another guest coming in here on Thursday. I'll let you know about that. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Well, you think everything go well here? I want to thank Todd Mickelson for filling in for me while I was out of town here.
Yeah, Todd enjoyed doing the Wheel of Destiny on Friday when we gave away some tickets there. He didn't quite have the same sound effects as you, so we got to work on that next time he does it.
Well, you know, he is the fill-in host.
Only the main host gets to do the sound effects.
Click, click, click. I'm going to have a beverage with me when I get ready to do that. That's going to be a pro job right there. So thanks, Todd. I appreciate that. It was nice to get out there and go across the country. Can I just say this about Wisconsin? Will the semi-trucks on Interstate 94 and 90 stop driving like your freaking Mazda Miatas? Can you just stop that? Dear Lord, is that obnoxious? Ugh. Yesterday, I'm driving back, and it's pouring rain. You got haze. You can barely see it. And these guys are just impatient because they want to get past these other trucks. And you're like, come on, man. I mean, people are passing you. And it's not that he was backing people up. It's just he was actually kind of trying to come into the lane while people were there next to him to try to force people out of his way so he could get going faster. Like, stop being a jerk, man. Ugh, it's interesting. I was telling my daughter when we got down to Madison and just south of Madison, and you go down Interstate 90. You don't take 94 towards Milwaukee. You go 90 down towards Rockford, and then you shoot over to Chicago that way. That's how I went. And I was telling her, look at how this highway is. Because I used to live in Beloit. My first radio job, professional radio job, was right on the border there, Beloit, Wisconsin, WGEZ, or as I refer to it as, Wiggies. I was at WGEZ down there. And it used to be just a simple little two lanes in each direction interstate. Nothing major. Then Paul Ryan became the Speaker of the House. And if you want to know what it's like to be the speaker and what kind of money you get as Speaker of the House, take a look at that highway now. It's 3 lanes all the way down through Janesville, through Beloit, connecting up into Wisconsin or into Illinois. It's brand new bridges. All that's all Paul Ryan money right there. If you're Speaker of the House, you get your pork projects paid for. That's for sure. I the University of Minnesota, I mean, I like the University of Minnesota a lot. My son goes there. I like the university. I root for the sports teams. I think the college does a lot of good jobs over there. The campus is nowhere near as, I was really stunned at how nice the Michigan campus was when I went out there to Ann Arbor. And just in the sense being of, sometimes I feel as if the people that run the University of Minnesota can't help but pat themselves on the back because they've designed some new building with no angles or corners or something like this that hovers above the ground. And the reality is that you could just keep the old traditional campus buildings and it looks pretty good. And that was one of the things about Michigan. It just felt like it was an older, nicer, kind of more regal school, for maybe that's a better way to say it. I mean, just it felt like it had provenance. Now, don't get me wrong. It didn't feel like I was, you know, nothing else like UW Stout or something like that. I mean, it's at the University of Minnesota. But it had a different feel. It just definitely had a different feel there. If you do go to Chicago, what are the best food? Best food was that pizza I had, which I took the picture of, which if you've not seen the picture of me, seriously, I made love to that deep dish pizza.
It's not hard to tell that. It was probably your favorite.
It was just, it kissed lots of tongue. It was phenomenal. And by the way, to all you people who are saying green olives, ew, I'm not sharing it with you, you clown. That's for me. It was sausage, onions, bell peppers, and green olives. Delicious. Absolutely delicious. The Super Dog was very good. I had some really good donuts here. And I opened up Pandora's box on Thursday when I commented that it's frustrating when I go to a donut shop in Minneapolis or Minnesota and I pick up a cream-filled donut and it's pudding. It's not even custard. It's not custard. It's Jell-O freaking pudding. That's not cream. A cream-filled donut has cream-filled donuts in it. And there are a few places that have them in the metro area, but the vast majority of places I go that they say, I got a cream-filled donut, guess what? It's not cream. It's pudding.
I'm with you on that. Yeah, I don't get any cream-filled donuts. Yeah, it's all not good.
It's pudding.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Jell-O pudding. It's all it is. I don't want Jell-O pudding. I don't like Jell-O pudding that much. It's okay sometimes. But as pudding, not as cream in a donut. So I opened up that cork. Those are delicious. I had there's a little patisserie down the street. I had a ham and cheese croissant yesterday morning for breakfast. Holy God, was that good. I went out to Gage's on Michigan Avenue and had the mussels. I see mussels on a menu. I grew up in Rhode Island, so I like clams and mussels, and I see them on a menu. I'm going to eat them. That's for sure. That was a pretty solid endeavor. Can I give credit to Second City? Second City, we went there and it's a dinner show. So basically, you get there, you get drinks. There's no drink minimum, but they have drinks, and they have a menu. Had a really nice dinner there. We went out to after we went to the Willis Tower on Saturday. My daughter wanted to go out to I don't know if you're aware of this, Mr. Beef. You know the TV show Beef that just won all the Oscar or the Emmys for that show. With Chef Abs on it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you know, if I say it's Chef Abs, everyone knows who I'm talking about. Chef Abs. She's like, Dad, can we walk down there? I really want to go there. I said, you do realize Chef Abs doesn't work there, right? And she goes, yeah. I said, okay, fine. So we hike on down, and this was only about a mile and a half. Oh, God. Walked past the Opera House, walked across the river. It just kept going down the street. Get to Mr. Beef, it's closed. So we walked all this way to go get this supposedly great beef sandwich, and Mr. Beef is not open. It's closed for a week. I don't know what he's doing. Apparently they're filming. There's notices up there. They're filming some episodes of Chicago Law. Do you know a show called Chicago Law? Is there a show called Chicago Law?
Sounds like some sort of Law and Order spinoff or something.
It sounds like a lazy network on a Tuesday night. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah. So they're filming something out there. So I don't know if that's why they were closed. But we went right down the street next door. It was like the Green Door Inn. It was a bar. Fantastic beef sandwich there. Absolutely killer. And good deviled eggs. And lots of drunk people. And so, you know, it was because it's Chicago and lunchtime. So what are you going to do? Did that. Overall, just I had a good time. If you do go down there, I'm going to share one last little piece of advice for you. I'm going to show this on the camera. There's a thing called My City Pass, which is really slick here. And you can go see, you get it. It's, I don't know what the cost is. You can go see five attractions for one price. And when it comes to the Willis Tower or the Hancock Tower, you get to go past all the general admission line. You get the fast pass to go up on the elevator quicker. Real slick. I highly recommend. We used it for all five. We did the aquarium. We did the Natural History Museum. We did the Art Museum, the Willis Tower, and the Hancock Tower. We did those were the five we did. Worth every dime. Absolutely. If you are going to Chicago, you want to do something like that, do it that way. And you'll have a good time. I was stunned at what a great value that was. And especially when all of a sudden on Saturday, when you're sitting there and you're seeing a line a la Disneyland to get on a ride, and I'm like, oh, we can go over here and there's six people waiting and we can jump on the next elevator. Bon voyage. Love that. It's a good town, man. Chicago is a good town. And Minneapolis, these are two very different towns. I think part of the culture and the development of Chicago is directly in, back way before Los Angeles was a growing metro area, but it was a definite campaign against New York. Here was this beacon. I mean, it was the financial center of all the industry of the Great Lakes was Chicago. And you had incredible amount of wealth that was made there. You had kind of a strategic location, and you had this mentality of, yeah, we can build skyscrapers. And they were the place where they first built the skyscrapers. And there are so many of them there. You know, Minneapolis, St. Paul could, build. I don't know why we have the self-imposed rule that nothing can be higher than the IDS Tower. But the IDS Tower would be completely lost in the skyline of Chicago. It would be. As a matter of fact, I would make an argument, you probably could build a 100-story residential tower in Minneapolis and you'd sell it out. Considering how quickly these places go nowadays, you'd sell it out real quick. And it would look a little like how you go back and you look at old pictures of when the Fauché Tower, and I think at one point the Fauché Tower was the tallest building west of the Mississippi River. And you had the skyline and all it was this one tower and everything else was kind of low level. And then they built the IDS Tower in the early 70s. Same thing. Also, there's one big low tall building and the rest of the city was lower. It would look the same way, but eventually it would fill in. I don't think we're not Chicago, but we're growing and we have a lot of great qualities here. I think it's time for us to stop acting like a small town. Like we're just, we can't let anybody get bigger than the IDS Tower. Yeah, we can. And granted, you're not building office space, you're building residential. But the reality is you could build that. And you could start something new here. Minneapolis is growing. It's not Des Moines anymore. It's not Chicago, but it's more starting to get towards Chicago than it is towards Des Moines. So I think it's time for us to stop thinking about things in a way that limits our ability to grow and realize Minneapolis-St. Paul kicks ass, and it's time for us to do some more showing off. It really is. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I'll take a break. Come on back. I got to get into some of the stories that were posted this weekend while I was gone because they're cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. So I want to go into this story that I talked with Austin Farrick about in the first hour. And I'm just going to read from this. And I read this because there is nothing more tiring for me than this false gumption that comes from rural Republican America. Where it's a, you're wasting my taxpayer dollars, followed immediately by, why aren't you spending more of the taxpayer dollars on me? You know, it's a level of hypocrisy which is become ingrained in these people. And I don't know what you do, because when they say things like this one farmer said in this story, and I'll get to that here, you almost want to look at you. It's like, do you even hear the stupidity that's coming out of your own damn mouth? And I understand there's some people like, hey, the Metro guy dumb talking down to the... No, this is me. I want to help you guys. I don't think you guys, just because you live in rural America, should be subjected to inferior water supplies. I think you should have broadband. I think you should have hospitals and medical care. I am all for those things. Do you know who's not? The Republicans. The Republicans are not out there trying to clean up your water supply. The Republicans are not out there trying to get you quality health care in your community. The Republicans are the ones, they're the ones that single-handedly stopped broadband expansion for a decade in this state. Unless it was near one of their cabins, then all of a sudden there is time for broadband. No, you guys want to look at us like we're abandoning you because I'm calling you out. You need to stop voting damn Republican. And can I just say this? If this is really true, if you only vote Republican because you just don't like the black people of Minneapolis, and that's how they campaign, you better vote for me or those people from Minneapolis. I saw this in Chicago. It's the same thing. It's in Gary, Indiana. Do you know how Indiana has become so red? It's because the Republicans there used the template of vilifying Gary and saying, if you let the Democrats in charge, Gary, Indiana is going to be everybody down here. That's just going to be it. And it's code word for black people. And that's what they do. And it worked. And it's been copied. Chicago, it's a large metro area. Yes, there are crime problems. I think in the song Bad, Bad Leroy Brown, it starts off on the south side of Chicago. It's not like it's new, but they vilify it because they basically use that as a way. Sure, we're not delivering broadband or quality health care or livable wages or drinkable water to you, but black people in Chicago. And that's the same damn thing that's happening in Minnesota. Republicans are sitting there saying, oh, we're not going to give you health care. We're not going to help make sure your water supply is safe. We're not going to help expand in the broadband. We're not going to help your roads. We're not going to fix any of these things. We're not going to confront corporate ag, which is killing your lifestyle, but black people in Minneapolis. And you fools keep voting for them because your racism is more important than your freaking quality of life. That's not on me. That's not liberal Matt McNeil. No, that's you. Your racism and your feeling of I have to be superior to people I don't like is a more important voting policy than actually fixing your problems. And nothing says it more than in this story. Water shoots up from the hills of Vance and Bonnie Hoggins' idyllic dairy farm here in the valley close to the Iowa border. That's why they named it Springside Farm in the 1990s. Unfortunately, the nitrate shoots up from there, too. Nitrate levels in the Haugen's water have steadily increased for the past 30 years, now ranging somewhere between 6 to 9 milligrams per liter of water every time they test their private well. The federal limit is 10 milligrams. Any more, and the pollution becomes dangerous for humans, especially infants. I wouldn't be drinking from the damn thing as we speak right now. I hope you're not giving that water to an infant. Minnesota promised to Federal Environmental Protection Agency in December that it would act quickly to help residents in southeast Minnesota with dangerous levels of nitrate in their wells after the EPA urged the state to take action to protect people from the polluted water. State efforts are underway to inform farmers and landowners of the dangers of their water, and agencies have put together a timeline to address the issue. 4 months after the promises, Minnesota has yet to deliver any clean drinking water to people most in danger. Moreover, the residents worry about how seriously the state will treat nitrate pollution in the future. It takes, was that, that's the fourth paragraph? No, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The fifth paragraph before they finally talk about the nitrate pollution, but they're not talking about where it's coming from. They haven't even said where it's coming from. So it takes you the fifth paragraph of the story for the Star Tribune to finally even say nitrate pollution. So it's not natural nitrate problems, it's nitrate pollution. they don't really even address the fact this is from the fertilizers. This is a man-made crisis, a man-made health crisis that is killing farmers left and right. Austin Frerich said, second highest rate of cancer in the country is Iowa right now. They are killing the farmers with the fertilizer. You would think to yourself, that, and this is a known quantity, and they all know this. But you think to themselves, well, we can't stop the fertilizers. Yes, you can. That's the craziest part. This is an incredibly preventable environmental disaster, and you guys keep doubling down. Here's the line from Vance Haugen. I want to have good, safe drinking water for myself and my children and my grandchildren. Agreed. I'm with you 100%. Then, and I want to farm and be able to do both of those things. I don't think they should be mutually exclusive. You can't have it both ways. You can't be poisoning the land with nitrates, having it go down into your water supply and come up and then act as if, why isn't the world taking care of me? Think about this for your second, okay? Say you woke up every morning and you walked outside your house and the neighborhood was covered with cocaine, okay? That someone had come on in the night and sprayed cocaine around and cocaine was everywhere. And they kept doing this. And you would come on out there and say, you know, I don't want to stop the cocaine spreading guy, but I want to be safe from the cocaine. You know what the problem is? It's the guy spreading the cocaine around. There's the problem. This cocaine is nitrates and fertilizer, and it's the same damn thing. They're doing it. The call is coming from inside your own damn house. You guys keep thinking to yourselves, well, when am I going to get my $30 million NASA-infused water filtration system? When that is not even a feasible argument to fix this problem. You know what it is? Stop using fertilizers with the nitrates. Ta-da! But you guys can't get out of your own damn way. And you watch as your kids get sick, your family and loved ones die from a man-made health crisis. But so you're so damn determined to be right about this and not realize corporate farming is what's killing you. You just want to sit there and blame those Democrats. I can tell you right now, if there was a guy running around my neighborhood throwing cocaine all over the place, I would want the guy arrested. Now, I'm not saying you arrest the farmer, but at least maybe you should say, yeah, maybe poisoning all the people in rural America is not the best option. And the thing which is crazy is you guys can't even get out of your own damn way. You can't look at that whole situation and say to yourself, they know they're doing it. These large corporate farms know that they're poisoning the water supply. They know they're killing people, and they don't care about you. And you still side with them than the people that are trying to help you. You can look at me all day long and say, you're against the family farmer. No, I'm on your side. But you guys themselves have basically welcomed your own demise, your doom, your destruction. You have done this to yourselves by sitting there and allowing these corporate farms to come and take over your lives and destroy your farming culture, destroy your quality of life, basically run everyone out of town. And then all of a sudden, when people start dying because they poison literally the water your family needs, you still don't have the courage to say what it is. Wow, corporate farming is really killing us all. I can't help you. I want to help you. And I guarantee you, you want the Democrats to send you as much money as possible to help you out. But then for you to sit there and say, the Democrats hate us, as you drink your safe-to-drink water thanks to the Democratic Party. Well, I can't get you got to get out of your own damn way. You need to start voting for freaking Democrats because the Republicans are trying to kill you at this point. Their policies are not. The policies the Republicans are putting forward lack of health care, more nitrates in the water, can't even do research on what's going on because you don't have good broadband. And they sit there, and every once in a while, they'll throw on a flannel shirt and some jeans and put their foot up on the old fence post and talk about how, get this quality of life before they go back to their house in the Hamptons. And you dupes keep thinking they're on your side. You should be following Rick Hansen, by the way. He mentioned Austin Farrick gave Rick Hansen, the representative, a shout-out. You should be, because he's the one that's trying to save you right now. He is the one that's trying to save the Minnesota farmer, for what it's worth. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show on your Monday. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. So apparently the congressional Republicans took time out from railing against Beyonce having a country album to put together some legislation this last week. Wow. This is stunning. Actually, before I get to that, are you ready to go, Brett?
Do it. Let's do it.
All right. I got a pair of tickets to Sexy Liberal right now. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Caller number 5. You're going to get yourself a pair of tickets to go see Sexy Liberal on Saturday, the Pantages Theater. Steph Fugel saying how Sparks, Frangela, Schechter's going to be in town for that. We're looking forward to it. We want to have you there. Caller number 5, you're going to get a pair of tickets. Our final week of giving away these tickets, so make sure you try to win. Caller number 5, 952-946-6205. Good luck with that. All right, so Republicans in the legislature, including Senate Assistant Minority Leader Justin Eichhorn of Grand Rapids, have introduced legislation inspired by the chemtrails conspiracy theory. Wow. No, seriously. Wow. The bill contains a mishmash of conspiratorial pseudoscience, including references to made-up phenomena like xenobiotic electromagnetism and fields, with just enough parroting of actual science to give away a veneer of credibility. The bill requires county sheriffs to investigate citizen complaints of polluting atmospheric activity and grants the governing authority to call up the National Guard on ground of any aircraft suspected of spreading pollutants. Whew. Wow. To professionals who study and understand atmospheric science, the legislation bears all the hallmarks of the chemtrails conspiracy theory, which posts that airplane exhaust is deliberately laced with harmful chemicals for various nefarious purposes, including forced sterilization and mind control. So I want to stop there. Okay. So you think that right now there's forced sterilization? The same people who are against abortion because people trying to keep getting them because they're having children that they don't want to have at that point. And you think that where is this large swath of sterilized people? Now, you being a virgin doesn't mean you're sterilized. Okay, maybe this is the thing. Okay, do you know how no one likes you? Okay, that's you. That's not chemtrails. You're just a jackass, okay? That's why girls want nothing to do with you, all right? Just, I'm trying to help you out. The more you know, rainbow emoji. You being a virgin doesn't mean that you've got forced sterilization. Okay, I just, someone has to tell you this. And mind control, what kind of mind control are they doing? I mean, when you went and saw Dune 2 this weekend, are you saying that the planes made me go see the movie and get popcorn with butter? Is that what you're saying? Because what are they controlling you to do? They're making us go online all the time. And to my evidence here, let me show you some websites. You know, have you thought this through a little bit? I don't think you thought this through. I mean, I could go with the fact that the jet stream is a very high up in the air wind river. so that basically anything you see over us really is falling way off to the east of us, because the jet stream is so strong and moves so fast that it's not falling here. I mean, most of the stuff that's probably falling on us comes from the Pacific Ocean, and most of those planes don't go over the Pacific Ocean. They go up north and they come back down south, because that's how the globe, you know. Okay, that's right. You guys are flat earthers. Well, I'm not. I don't know who's flat earthers, but it's a ball. Okay, there you go. I could go with that route to just kind of prove to you, okay, you're all a bunch of crazy kook balls. But I'll just go with you. Okay, is like North and South Dakota a bunch of forced sterilized people now? Is that really what's going on? I mean, it you know, it's 1 in 3 men. I mean, that's why they got those little pills. I mean, and once again, you being a virgin is not forced sterilization. Okay, that's just. You need to work on your social skills. I'm just gonna, maybe we should do it. Maybe, you know, try to clean yourself up a little bit. You know, try to, you know, put on a good, you know, not talk about Trump the second you get into a conversation with someone. You know, you just these little things. I'm just going to suggest that to you. Because of the text of this bill focuses so much on electromagnetic radiation, you can tell that it is coming from the community of people concerned with chemtrails, said Holly Buck, who studies geoengineering at the University of Buffalo in New York. Lawmakers in at least 7 other states have introduced similar bills recently. While most have stalled in committee, a Tennessee bill recently sailed through the GOP-controlled House and Senate and awaits the signature or veto by the Republican governor there, which, by the way, I'm hoping they veto, because this literally could outlaw planes flying over a state. Which, it's going to be interesting how interstate commerce laws are going to affect you there. But they basically, and the people who are arguing this have explicitly referenced chemtrails conspiracies during the legislation. If you look at the 1,000 planes, you won't see one chemtrail, but then all of a sudden you see one. The author of the Tennessee Senate bill told the Tennessee Lookout last month. So we're just asking the question, are they putting anything in their air? Could it be toxic? Okay, there's a difference between asking the question and then actually asking scientists and realizing, no, they're not, versus going into Reddit subgroups and basically saying, it's part of the Chinese plot. Because this is, okay, you're losers, all right? I talked about this with Patty on her show last Wednesday. You're kind of losers. You can't get out of your own way. And the reason why you like Trump is because Trump looks at you and says, well, you're not a loser. They're the loser. And it's the validation you needed. That's why you're going to fall on the sword for that guy all day long, is because he basically he validates your failures as something noble and righteous. And it's not. Your life, you can fix your life at any point. You just have to address what the problem is. You don't like your job? Get a different job. You don't like where you live? Move. You don't like who you're with? Change that. You can do a lot of different things. And that's an easy thing to do. But it's the people who basically refuse to change their lives and the miserable. They start wallowing in, you know, it's not because I've made 18 or 19 horrible decisions in my life. It's because of the airplanes. No woman wants to have sex with me. You know what that is? Forced sterilization. Now, no. It's not. The Minnesota House version of the bill, authored by GOP Representative Jeff Doseth of Kettle River, co-sponsored by Representatives Pam Altendorf of Red Wing, Dawn Gilman of Dassel, and Kristen Knudsen of Lakeshore. The Senate version was authored by GOP Senator Eric, the mayor of Key Lime Pie Town, Lucero of St. Michael, co-sponsored by Glenn Glunhagen of Glencoe, Bruce Anderson of Buffalo, Nathan Wessenberg, ZZ Flop of Little Falls, and Icorn. What a group. Some of the language of the bill is nonsensical. I don't think xenobiotic electromagnetism in fields is a thing. It doesn't even make sense, said Buck. The lead, because it's not science. It's stupid people thinking they can make up words and it sounds science. It's like a Buck Rogers in the 21st Century episode from 1935. They're just making up words and trying to make it sound like they're doing something. The lead authors of both chambers' bills did not respond to requests to define xenobiotic electromagnetism or to provide a real-world example of it, because they pulled it out of their backsides. Among other things, the legislation seeks to ban weather engineering, cloud seeding, stratospheric aerosol injection, and other atmospheric activity which is harmful to humans or the environment, as well as emission of xenobiotic agents and excessive electromagnetic radiation.
There was some of this weather modification we needed today to see the eclipse.
If this is happening, we had a freaking eclipse, you clowns. Why didn't you? Anyway. See, that's how they keep you guessing. It's because now it was cloudy day. And if they were to clear up the skies so everyone could see the eclipse, everyone would know.
That's how you throw people off the scent.
The bill also gives the governor the authority to call the National Guard and ground any aircraft suspected of engaging in prohibited activity. God. Taken on face value, the legislation could ban all air traffic in the state due to apparent blanket prohibition of polluting atmospheric activity that is harmful to humans and the environment. Similarly worded legislation in other states has been shot down over concerns about the effects on agricultural operators, ethanol producers, radio and TV broadcasters, and other industries. The bill has no chance of becoming a law under DFL trifecta. Currently a thing. Can I make this one point about this? If you want to see how far the Minnesota Republican Party has fallen, how does this bill even get introduced in an election year? You sound like a bunch of crazed loon balls. You sound like you're morons. You sound like you're stupid idiots. And it used to be a time not that long ago where Republican leadership would say, well, we're not going to even allow you to put this bill out there because you're going to make the rest of us look like a bunch of stupid idiots. And here you guys are. We know what we're doing. This is why I'm still a virgin. And the coats can't be happening, helping at all in that case. But I mean, I make jokes. Just taking a guess. Hypothetical. Your Republican Party has fallen so much that this bill got introduced in an election year. And if I'm the DFL, I'm putting this bill all over every damn thing, including Senate leadership of the Republican Party co-sponsored the cuckoo kooky kookaburra bill of 2024. Who's our winner, by the way, of the tickets there, if I may ask, Brett?
Yeah, we had Stan from Spring Lake Park winning.
Stan, congratulations. Enjoy that. Another pair of tickets tomorrow. Another pair of tickets on Thursday. Wheel of Destiny with 8 pairs of tickets on Wednesday. Make sure you're here for that. Let's take a break. Come on back. Wrap up the show for a Monday. When we do return, it is the Matt McNeil Show on your Monday.
I'm out here 1,000 miles from my home.
It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I was down at Heartland Signal, and great guys. Now, like I said, I got a ton of photos I got to post later on, so look at the social medias for this stuff. But they have got out their story today of the 5 craziest stories, 5 embarrassing Republican stories from March. Number 5, we talked about this guy, the Nebraska state senator who was sexually harassed on the Senate floor by another senator, Steve Halloran, who basically injected another senator into a rape fantasy story. Yeah. Number 4, Arby's picks up Tennessee lawmakers slack to feed school children. Just one of the reasons why I'm grateful I'm in Minnesota, we actually take care of our kids. This we cherish life crap that these guys say when they don't cherish life. I mean, Arby's apparently cherishes life, which that's a deep dive, isn't it? Sorry, Arby's.
You're never going to get an endorsement deal from Arby's.
You bring back the potato cakes, I'll be nice. You bring back the potato cakes, I'll be nice, okay? and I'll do all the ads for free. I'll do the ads for free. You bring back the potato cakes and I'll be nice. Anyway, so Arby's doing the decent thing in Tennessee and actually helping to feed kids. The Republicans' thin hold on Congress, he talked about how this is Heartland Signal putting out that, you know, the House Speaker Mike Johnson, the Republicans, U.S. House of Representatives, basically has gotten to a point where they're barely holding on to power as the air is. That's the third most embarrassing story. The second most embarrassing one was the Missouri Democratic State Senate candidate Stephen Weber shined a light on his Republican opponent Chuck Basie's aggressive and inappropriate behavior online. Weber shared multiple text messages, emails, social media replies where Basie routinely berates others, including Weber himself, who is the former chairman of the Missouri Democratic Party. Basie is referred to Weber as a crybaby blankwad and a con artist. And allegedly, this is a Republican candidate for office. And allegedly that he is, well, he basically calls him gay with a secret boyfriend, which he does not have. The St. Louis Post-Dispatch released an editorial. He responded to Weber with a statement to Heartland Signal. It appears that Stephen Weber is afraid to challenge from a former legislator who actually has accomplished many great legislative victories in Missouri, like insulting people. Yes. So there's that. That's the number two. Guess what the number one most embarrassing Republican story of the month of March was? The cows. That's Warren Limmer. It's a hometown win for Warren Limmer, who thinks that we should not have safe gun storage in the state of Minnesota because at any point, the cows could turn on us and we need to be able to shoot quickly at the cows. Nice job, Warren.
Chemtrails could be helping those cows.
Wow. Warren Limmer doing Minnesota, well, not exactly proud. How about we say it like that? Native Roots Radio is up next. Have a good one. We're back tomorrow. I'm on Patty's show tonight. Till tomorrow. See ya.